all precedent.
We're finding in this new age we move into, a lot of precedent is being violated in many, many, many areas, which is the interesting part. I think we're going to have Mr. Nanko join us here on the telephone shortly. And Lyle will tell us whenever he is on and ready to go to get into the discussion. But let's go further with these things that we were talking about there. And also, Raymond, I think you had something about that you wanted to describe to us that was rather recent. That is,
I did.
Yeah, I'd really appreciate if you would tell them something about the priest and the experience with the priest in Southern California.
Oh,
something current.
Yes, there was a case recently described to some slight extent in the newspapers, and then it was also more fully described in various Catholic newspapers. A priest was saying the Mass. And on the host was observed some spots of blood. In fact, one witness remarked that it formed by dots across. So you have something similar to this other business where you have actual symbols formed by blood. Then also, he, according to the most descriptions, he wiped his forehead with a cloth and blood came on the cloth and things of this type. It was obviously a relative of stigmatic phenomena. In fact, in my own opinion, it would probably be, I've forgotten the word, but at any rate, a stigmatic effect.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases of stigmata, you have the actual wound, or actual pain of the wounds, then not until many years afterwards do the wounds actually open up, or you may have red marks, or you may have an effusion of blood on the surface. In other words, you have all types of effects. And this seemed to be in an earlier stage. It was a very interesting thing. The priest has been moved from his church, and I understand is under observation for further study. It was a very interesting case. But as we were saying, it's just an example of this type of thing that does go on continually. And that, incidentally, some hearers may not know that it also occurs outside of the Catholic Church, so very rare. In fact, there was a case. I have two cases in my collection. I was, in fact, involved in correspondence with the people. One was an evangelical church. I've forgotten the exact denomination. In fact, two of them were evangelical churches. I've forgotten the denomination, but they were Protestant.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there some sort of... is there something significant about the fact that whenever we think of these kind of manifestations or these unusual things going on, that they are, for some reason or another, generally connected with the Catholic Church? Yeah, have you been able to figure that out? You were telling us the last time we were here about the images that appeared above a church.
Oh, in Zaytun.
In Zaytun.
Right.
At
fact,
Catholic Church.
You did receive a journal on that, I hope.
I did not.
Oh, well, we'll send you one by all means. I'm sorry.
Pardon me. But that was quite a phenomenon that
happened. Yeah, it was incredible. An incredible case. Now, that was a Coptic church, which, of course, is a Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know either. I mean, I don't know the reason why, Bill, that it seems to happen so much more often with the Catholic Church, but I have a feeling that a lot of the people who have these experiences do couple with their faith a high degree of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but I just have a hunch that that's a part of it.
Well, I do agree with that. And then there's another element. With the Catholic Churches, the people are more accustomed to think in terms of symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in your Protestant churches, not all, of course, but you possibly have less concentration upon symbolic material. Now, whether that might have something to do with it, I don't know.
So is the manifestation then of those living on this side who have deeply held beliefs about that, or could be?
I don't understand.
If you are a devout Catholic and you are deeply involved in all the symbolism of the Catholic Church, which is very, very meaningful to you, then perhaps you're in some way able to energize these things, whereas if you're not so involved in that, in your religion, in some other religion, be it Jewish or Buddhist or whatever, that you're not able to add that energy to it.
Well,
some
way
or another.
You might state that another way, too. Rather than energize, you could say, and I think it's probably correct, that as you modify an effect,
mm-hmm.
in other words, there's a general, let us say, just general psychic effect floating about at all times, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
And it does occur in much greater strength and connected with religious activity. In fact, psychic phenomena is at its richest with religious activity. But you can have the psychic effect modified by the belief of the person. That doesn't mean that they're producing it by any means. That just merely means that they're acting to modify it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a law, that's a great distance from the common concept of people producing phenomena themselves.
You know, one, I think a good example of that might be with the near-death experience,
mm-hmm.
where so many people who are clinically dead have the same tunnel, the same light at the end, the same loving being, but then they modify it, as Raymond is saying, sometimes according to their religious beliefs, such as maybe a Hindu coming back, seeing it as one of their religious figures, and maybe
right.
a lot of Protestants saying they feel it must have been Christ, they probably are all describing the same being of light.
But they're having to equate
yes.
it with their own consciousness
yes.
there,
mm-hmm.
Or seeing loved ones at mm-hmm. the end. This is
yes.
actually what they would want to see. And indeed, they may be.
Of course,
but if you believe in reincarnation, that loved one has been a lot of people. You know,
there'd be a lot of people along the tunnel.
And so
yeah.
it takes on whatever is in your mind. It seems like.
Of course, as soon as we say that, we have to think of examples where that's not adequate to describe things. For example, in the Zaytun Egypt apparition, Mary, you would expect that the Catholics and the Coptic Christians would want to see this beautiful apparition of Mary, but you surely wouldn't expect the Egyptians to.
You know,
they saw her.
I did a bad thing. We were talking about that manifestation over there around the Coptic Church in Egypt, but we forgot to tell them what it was.
Oh.
Well, we all know it so well, we figure the whole world ought to know, right?
That's right.
Bring us up to speed on that
okay.
for those that have just joined us.
All right. Well, for 4 years, between about 1968 and about 1972, this happened over and over and over. But as it began on the roof of a little Coptic Christian church in Zaytun, Egypt, some mechanics across the street from the church saw a nun, seeming to be a nun, on the roof, and they were afraid she was about to jump. She was on the edge of the roof. So they went running to get the local authorities, I guess the police and fire department types. And as those came, they realized she was no ordinary nun. She was, in fact, a beautiful, glowing woman. And this particular apparition or glowing figure was seen over and over and over. And Raymond is perhaps the authority in the United States on the Zaytun case.
You went over there, didn't you, Raymond?
No.
But
no.
You've interviewed several people, and maybe you could tell us more, but I know one thing.
Well, I know a fair amount
yeah.
about it. There are,
right.
I'm not claiming to know more about it than anyone else.
Well.
But
as nearly as much, then, as some people are.
No. But, yes, the thing was an amazing case. In fact, it was the greatest psychic case in the world. It also had more witnesses than any other case that's ever existed. The nearest thing to it was the Fatima apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
And at the peak of that, I believe they had roughly about 70,000 witnesses. But in the case of the Zaytun, which was a suburb in Cairo, in the case of the apparitions there, because at times it was a multiple effect, they had 250,000. And in fact, it got to the point, now that's in a night.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine how many million witnesses they had. This thing would take place, five nights out of the week. I have discussed it with people who were there. One man, in fact, he's a Coptic priest. He's also a medical doctor. I've discussed it with two medical doctors, as a matter of fact, who were witnesses. Occasionally, the apparition would last as many as 4 and 8 hours. It moved about, did all types of things. And finally, the Egyptian government tore down the garage, which was a huge thing. This was an immense building. It was a public transport affair of some type. They tore that down to make room for the crowds. They were so gigantic.
When was this happening? It wasn't that long ago.
1968 to...
72?
Yeah, and apparently effects are still going on. Not the apparitions, but there are other things associated with a very complex thing.
Like what?
Odd lights, perfumes, reported images on walls, on windows. I've seen one myself. Miraculous healings of all types of diseases.
Around the church itself?
Sometimes around it or sometimes at a distance by people who were there. This is some fairly good medical testimony to that effect. So it was very, very complex.
And as you look at it, Raymond, I know you've spent many years investigating this kind of thing. To what do you attribute this? Is this really some sort of a window between physical and spiritual life that we're seeing there?
I would say so.
Being manifest?
I would say so, personally. There are really not too many theories. I can just run them down quickly if you want.
Go right ahead.
All right, the first one's fraud. Well, that's out if you study the case. I mean, it's impossible.
And why do it?
Yeah,
what are you accomplishing?
Then, of course, you have malobservation error and all that type of thing. You can rule these things out. Then there's an Another general idea is that the phenomena was generated by the viewers. This is a very common thing in parapsychological circles, that a psychic phenomenon is generated by the person themselves. Well, it's a very nice theory, but it's 99% speculation, and it runs contrary to the facts as stated and to the facts as presented.
You can say the same thing about the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah. Right. Then you have the theory that in the case of the Zaytun affair, or these various religious apparitions that have been seen, that it actually was the Virgin Mary. It was precisely as it appeared. Then you have another view, which is that it was an effect from an actual spiritual source modified by the viewers according to their beliefs. But that does not in any way contradict the preceding theory. So you have these various thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Nanko, I think, has joined us now on the phone. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Good
Welcome
evening.
Aboard. We were hoping you'd get down to the studio with us tomorrow.
Oh, couldn't make it. But you sound like you have some interesting guests there.
Well, they're pretty good people in their field, I think.
Dr. McAdams and the Reverend Bayless?
Yes, there they are.
I believe that you believe that I am.
No, I believe that you believe. It's a little private joke there.
To what do you attribute these things, am I?
Well, actually, I must admit that I've just tuned in shortly, so I'm not certain that I've heard the whole discussion to this point.
That was a well-turned phrase.
Oh, thank you.
We were at this point discussing the situation in Egypt, you know, the manifestations that happened down there, and the latter part of the last hour, we were talking about the trip that you and Liz took.
I'm sorry, I didn't get to hear any of that.
And before we turn it over to the callers and let them put you guys through the paces there, what were your impressions of visiting this amazing lady in Italy?
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about the Zaytun case. One of the reasons that I recall that we were sent over to Italy was to not let a chance like this pass us by, as was the case with the Zaytun incident, which, you know, was a magnificent case and, you know, basically unstudied by parapsychology proper. You know, there's several reasons for that. Some people are afraid to stick their neck out and say they're going to go over and chase after some apparitions over a church. But with the Natuzzi case, it was quite well studied by the board of the Society for Psychical Research in L.A., the Southern California Society.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth McAdams pretty much got things rolling as far as developing the funds for this trip. And we weren't going to let too many things stand in our way and go out there and get the story.
When she wants to go, she's going to go.
That's right. She's going to do it. I'm smiling, Liz.
I told Bill we want you to go back now for stage two and want him to go with you.
I'm ready. Are you ready, Bill?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Now we've paved the way, and I think that we can probably do a little more work there next time.
Well, maybe we can time it well that we can take an open mind trip over there if we would be welcome. We're going to take one to London, and I certainly want all of you to go. What are some of the things that we can look forward to in London while we're on that?
Well, I know that you mentioned Ina Twigg, and, of course, one of the things that's so fun, and she, of course, being a well-known medium.
Pardon me, didn't she just die recently?
I must say that I was not aware of that, Raymond. If she did...
I may be wrong, but...
If she did, maybe you'll have to have a reading with another medium to receive something from Ina Twigg.
We're trying to work out an arrangement where we can sit down with Frieda Fell.
Oh, that's wonderful. Frieda Fell, we have informally investigated her and had her to present for our Southern California Society, and I guess I'd have to say personally, on a personal level, that's the best reading I've ever had. Was with her.
She electrified us one night here. All she would let the audience do is give them their name, period. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm Bill
mm-hmm.
at WAP. And you could just hear the people gasping at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bill, she also did a couple performances for a couple academic courses that I was teaching on parapsychology and did basically the same thing with them. You're talking about 80 to 100 students, and I pretty much brought her in there to challenge a student's thinking on how is she basically coming up with this information, and she just stupefied everybody.
She hears spirits. That's the way she defines it. She does not go into a trance. She doesn't want to lose that much control of her faculties is the reason.
Mm-hmm.
She says she has gone into a trance, but she'd rather not. And it works very well. I know that it's enormously effective. Naturally, she did. She told me a few things. It was none of her business.
She tells it the way it is, too. Huh?
While we're over there, we'll try to introduce the group that go with us to Rosemary Brown.
Oh, how exciting! Raymond is very familiar with Rosemary Brown, and in fact, Stuart Robb, who I
yes.
believe has been on your program, is
uh-huh.
another expert on her and plays some of the pieces which she says come from deceased composers.
Stuart just sent me a number of tapes because he will be doing a Rosemary Brown concert here for charity, but the date got changed, and so we'll talk about that a little bit later as we know when it was. But, Raymond, you might want to acquaint the folks just a little bit with Rosemary, if you know her so well.
I don't know her personally.
Uh-huh.
Familiar with the case, of course. Oh, I think it's a very remarkable case, and being interested in music myself, I think certainly there's there's a lot to be said for her claims, namely that the music comes from the dead composers, the great composers. There's a great controversy on the thing, and some very prominent musicologists state that the music really is a pastiche. And others say that it very definitely represents music by the composers, or who presumably wrote it. And it's very impressive.
Well, it's subtle things. For instance,
yeah, very impressive.
The topography of the piano, the musicians will tell me, is exactly right. If it's a piece by Rachmaninoff, for instance, Rachmaninoff had the big hands. Liszt had the small hands. And the piano feels right to an accomplished musician. And the fact that she has done so much in such a short period of time, it's only been about 10 or 12 years now that this phenomenon has been going on, and she's been producing these masterworks, well over 1,000 of them already. And in the style, not only in the style of the masters, but in a natural evolution of the masters as they were moving along, which is quite different than you just imitating Beethoven. Because Beethoven was many things, and the things that she's producing, like the Tenth Symphony, which is underway, she's got one or two movements done, but Beethoven comes in the next day and cancels everything that he did and start all over again. It's a phenomenal thing.
Well, it's really exciting that you're going to London and that you're going to talk to Rosemary Brown. That is really a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Well, we're trying to talk to Rosemary Brown. I have not got a confirmation from her that she will. She's very, very busy and, of course, very sensitive.
And whether that happens or not, London is such a fantastic place because it's the historical start for so much of this field. You know, in 1882, the Society for Psychical Research in London started. It's still going on with lectures and all kinds of activities. And then there are so many different groups. The old College of Psychic Science, different ones have different names now, with mediums on their staff all the time. And it being a part of the tradition there, so much more even than in our country.
Well, it is a hotbed of it there.
It is.
The mediums and the psychics and the incredible mm-hmm. things to see.
Mm-hmm.
We have an invitation from the House of Lords, from Lord Kilcarney, where they will brief us on the ongoing investigation of a British Parliament into the UFO phenomenon and the involvement of the British government in it. So that'll be a part of it. Maybe we'll sneak on up to Stonehenge and some things like that.
How fascinating.
The trip, we want to take it sometime in May, I believe, is the date, although Chuck Caramelli has not nailed those dates down. We will be staying at one of the fine hotels, and we ought to tell everybody that they're welcome to go. All you have to do is send a letter to me, and the KABC Travel Club people then will get a hold of you, and it will be a very inexpensive way to go to England and enjoy the week over there with us. It's a part of the KABC promotion, our travel club. So you can go inexpensively, you'll stay, and have a great time. We'll all go together, and we're looking forward to it. If you'd like to go, just write me a letter, and I'll put it in the right hands. Tell me what you'd like to do, by the way, if you do go to England with us, some of the things that you want to see. We don't have all of the answers yet, and we're just as busy as bees trying to make it an exciting trip for everyone. You guys going to go with us?
Wouldn't that be great? I'd love to.
All right.
I'd love to.
What about you, Mike? You want to go to London again?
I'm already packed.
You're already packed?
That's right. I never unpacked from Italy.
Yeah. And then maybe the year after that, we'll go to Italy and then swing down into Egypt and go to the pyramids and things. We could make that one delightful trip. We have a lot of things planned for the KABC Travel Clubbers. You guys ready to talk to the folks out there?
Sure.
They're beginning to line up. I know they have some questions. Our subject is psychic phenomena tonight, and we certainly have three of the experts to talk to you about it. So if you've had questions or if you've had experiences, get in on it. Let me give you the numbers. In Los Angeles, 520. They all end with TALK, T-A-L-K. In the San Fernando Valley, 990. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, your number is 244. The San Gabriel Jenkins, it's Open Mind. With me, Raymond Bayless, Dr. Liz McAdams of the Southern California Society for Psychical Research. And on the horn is Mr. Mike Nanko, who is one of the researchers for the society. And between the three of them, I think they can ask an answer about any kind of question that you may have in this intriguing and fascinating area of psychic phenomenon. Let's go talk to Janet. Janet, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm just doing fine.
I just finished reading a book by Joanna Michelson, and she was involved in psychic surgery, I believe, and she was being groomed to become a medium through which a psychic surgeon could work, who was working through a woman by the name of Sanchita. But it turns out in this in her story that she came to the conclusion after spending a year deeply involved this type of thing, that it was not of a good source, but actually of an evil source, and she became a Christian. Her book is fascinating. As a matter of fact, I wish you'd have her on your program. But coming from a biblical perspective, you know, there are several things that, you know, as a Christian, we would look for if, you know, we're going to evaluate. I believe that these phenomena are real, but where are they coming from? Is it a good or a bad source?
Well, it's an age-old question.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And I think we have to be careful because I don't say they're not real. I think they're very real. But we can be deceived.
Are you extending that to the whole field, let us say, of psychic phenomena?
Well, it depends. Like I said, I'm coming from a Christian standpoint, so I would have to go by the Bible has very specific things to say about it.
Like what?
Well, for instance, that, I don't want to go through all the scriptures, but in Exodus, Leviticus, Acts, Malachi, Zechariah, they're all specific injunctions that if you, these things occur, if it doesn't do this, this, and this, that you would not follow it. So that's what I would go by.
Well, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. most all of the things revolve around one thing, and that is that, let's take statements from mediums, presumably representing the dead. The general idea is then that all of these things emanate from the devil, a satanic source. Well, by the same token, you could take any biblical statement and say the same thing. So anyone that uses that argument is using a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought I'd present another tack.
I know, but remember that that sword has two sharp blades.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, I still wish you'd have Joanna Michelson on your show because she's a fascinating person.
Well, I certainly would look into Joanna.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first I've heard of her. And
she's an absolutely fascinating person.
I'm always open-minded to get something new on the table to chew
mm-hmm.
upon and get a better grip on the reality of the world that we live in.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janet, for your call. And Jerry.
Yes.
Yes, what's on your mind tonight, Jerry?
Okay, I have a question. I have experienced most of my life, and I'm 38 years old. I know when a person's going to die, sometimes months, sometimes days before they do. And what is that called? I mean,
precognitive.
Yes, precognition.
Is that what it is? Okay. Yes.
It is not uncommon at all to
send
be precognitive.
Send in your predictions to us beforehand. We'd be very appreciative.
Yeah, what do you see for the three of us sitting here and Mike on the telephone?
It'll make a nice study.
Yeah, what about a plane trip?
Well, there's good news and bad news.
No.
There's good news and bad news?
I'm just kidding.
Tell us the good news first.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Jerry, you know that most pieces of psychic information that comes across spontaneously happens when there's some type of tragedy, injury, illness, death, accident to people, and those are the ones that are most often reported and stick out in people's minds more than the type of things we try and produce in the laboratory where we try and simulate real-life spontaneous conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So you're obviously in tune to something there.
Well, I have other things, too, but that's the... I really don't particularly like that particular thing.
No. Is it pretty rather unerring with you whenever you sense that someone is going to pass over that they do within a short period of time?
Yes, it's never failed. In fact, it just happened recently with my best friend. I knew her father was dying, and she didn't particularly want to go to the hospital because he'd been in and out so often.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, you better go, you know, and... I just haven't failed yet.
How many instances have you experienced of this?
About seven.
That's enough to get where you don't want to think about anybody, isn't it?
Yeah, I just would rather not, you know. But I've had other experiences with knowing something's going to happen before it happens. And like I heard you speak earlier about the fact that I might be wrong in what I'm saying. Not having it, like I've called a friend and say, don't go where you're going to go, because if you do, this is exactly what's going to happen. And it's happened, but it's not very frequent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not uncomfortable with it, but yet some of my friends get uncomfortable with it. And it's like when I speak, it's like I'm E.F. Hutton. They listen. And I'm going, hey, wait a minute, I'm just talking here. I'm not, you know, trying to predict anything.
I think I would listen, too. You know, your credibility builds up as time goes on.
Yes.
But precognition, I suppose, is one of the most common of the psychic phenomena, wouldn't you say, Raymond?
Yes, it's very common. That's quite true.
And also, Jerry, one of the interesting things about precognition, not of the type that you're talking about that has to do with death so much, but of the type that has to do with foreseeing accidents, is that it seems to have a potential for helping people to avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
As you're saying, that sometimes someone will have a dream, for example, say that he or she is going to be in an auto accident, and they see the exact intersection, the truck, the this, the that. And when that actually happens, and they see that truck veering toward them the way they did in their precognition, they are on guard and can move and sometimes avoid what would have perhaps been a disastrous incident. And so this may hold some potential for helping people.
You know, there was a wrenching story about a gentleman. Do you remember the horrible accident they had in Chicago a couple of years ago, the DC-10 that flipped over as it was taking off?
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman... Now, my facts are not straight on it, but he was down in Louisiana or Tennessee or someplace who had a premonition of that, the plane, the flight number, everything about it.
Mm.
And he was trying to contact the authorities and let them know and told them all about it. And, of course, no one listened.
Isn't that something?
Until it was too late.
I remember that case.
And the trauma that this gentleman went through was... It almost twisted his mind, you know, as if he didn't do enough. He knew this was going to happen, and it wasn't something that ordinarily happened to him, as I recall the story. Just for some reason or another, he got the flash, he got the entire story, everything about it, and was powerless to do anything with the information he had.
Very, very frustrating.
Simply because no one would pay any attention.
Well, that can be a problem, because I know I don't have dreams, I just know. You know, instance before or a day before, it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody speaks it in my head. It's just, I know.
You just have that sense and feeling about
it. Yes, and sometimes you go, gee, I don't want to, what if I'm wrong? You know? And I thought, well, better be a fool than to just let it go and something terrible happens.
I don't think there's anything wrong about warning anybody if you have these premonitions and let them know that that's a premonition of yours, and they can use that information as they will.
The caller before me, she said she was a Christian, and I'm a born-again Christian and spirit-filled besides, and so I had to take quite a few years to reconcile what I was going through with my Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that... you know, there's God-given gifts, and there's things that you can create in your own mind that can be demon-possessed or whatever. But I think it's just a natural form. I don't know that much about it, you know.
Well, I think one of the things that we fail to see, particularly whenever we speak from the vantage point of a Christian belief, is that the early figures in the Christian church, Jesus and his apostles, and certainly the elders of the church and those that were close to him, particularly all during the first century, were absolute masters at the psychic arts. They were practitioners the like of which we have rarely seen. And if they were doing it, and they were doing it with dazzling display, it's very hard then to come back and say what they were doing was wrong.
Right.
And then you pull out quotes from Jesus such as, these things that I do, ye shall do and more.
That's right.
Yeah, it's called prophecy today, or a word of knowledge.
Right.
By the spirits.
Yes.
So, and related to that, I wanted to mention that this question of religion and how it fits with parapsychology is what prompted me recently to help found a new foundation called the International Foundation for Survival Research, which is totally devoted to the question of life after death. And I'm mentioning that because to me there is such a close tie-in and support from scientific evidence for the cherished religious beliefs about continued consciousness after death.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to mention that if anyone listening would like a free copy of a little booklet put out by the foundation which summarizes all of this evidence for survival after death, we'd be more than happy to make it, to have it sent to you free of charge. And all you'd have to do is in Los Angeles to call and leave your name and address. And the number in Los Angeles is 857-5604.
Is that an 818 or 213?
That's a 213.
Okay.
Oh,
that's a 213, and it's 857-5604.
Okay, and we certainly will have that number on file with Lita Mack and broadcast information, but we'll give it to you more. Again, I would like for all of you to have a copy of this booklet. It is free. Jerry, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank
okay.
you. Bye.
And we have Martin on the line. Hello, Martin.
Hello. I didn't hear the entire show, but I know that the apparition at Fatima was mentioned, and I wanted to talk about that, if your guests had any special knowledge of it.
Well, I think they do.
Well, you mentioned, I think one of them mentioned that the miracle of Fatima was witnessed by some 70,000 witnesses, and that's usually the figure given. I've done a little research on it over the years. But I haven't read any articles about the apparition before that were written before like 1930 that gave a figure that was any higher than 25,000. So I'm beginning to think that was a little bit inflated over the years. More to the point, I was wondering if there have been any attempts to give a truly grueling interview to the only living one of the visionaries who claimed to have seen this, because I really think there have been some questionable things in her testimony over the years. She has a tendency to make after-the-fact prophecies. You know, the Russian Revolution she claims was prophesied to her during the apparitions, but we never found out about that until after the revolution, similarly with World War II and several other things. And I was wondering, in your travels, do you ever plan to go talking to her, maybe even subject her to a lie detector test?
she'd hardly allow that. No, there would be practically no chance whatsoever of such an interview.
Well, some people have talked to her. I admit they were within the church.
Well, not when you go dragging a lie detector in the room.
Well, I don't know. I mean, why not?
Well, you try it. I'd be very interested to see the results.
How old is she now?
Oh, gosh. She was, 13 when that happened? So I guess, and that happened in 1914, wasn't it? So she must be nearly as old as the century.
Getting right in there. I doubt if she'd go for the lie detector. I have to agree with Raven.
Well, okay,
she would want you to believe her.
Let me ask your guests, what are their feelings on the case? I mean, do they accept the story as it's normally told, and it's been told many times, including a truly god awful Hollywood movie, or
Hollywood has
its way with
us. Or
they share my same feeling that it's all rather questionable.
The story has certain elements that have changed over time. That's quite true, but I myself think it's probably certainly pretty correct in general.
Not that many people are going to be mass hallucinating.
Hardly.
Yeah.
For instance, it could be, I suppose, the same type of scrutiny could be given to the Zaytun case, for instance, or any of your various religious apparitional cases. You will find occasionally certain elements that don't quite coincide, but that's true in anything. As a matter of fact, after we leave the building here, I dare say that the gentleman sitting to the left of me would probably have a few observations which wouldn't necessarily jibe with the exact fact, and that would hardly negate the fact that we were here, if you see my point.
Speaking of these kind of there's one going on now in Long Island with Bayside. Do you know anything about that? I get letters about it all the time. There are two nuns there that are claiming to speak as if they are Jesus and Mary.
Yes, Raymond, go ahead.
Well, that's a difficult thing to speak about. Personally, I'm not impressed by it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. That's a personal opinion. I have talked to various people within the church. They are not, they're most certainly not sponsoring it, nor guaranteeing its authenticity in any way.
Now, this is not a function of the Catholic Church,
no.
Then. This is something they're doing on their own.
Yes.
You know, related to that, Bill, we have a woman, Miss Ann Segerman, coming. It hasn't quite been firmed up yet, but I believe in February, who we just learned about and who perhaps is one of the leading authorities in our whole country on apparitions of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a very devout Catholic and is doing this sort of as her perceived mission, but she is a gold mine of information, and I'll let you know more about it. You might like to talk with her.
Okay. I would love to talk with her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, may I ask one more question?
Sure, Martin, go ahead.
I seem to recall also hearing very briefly that there was another apparition in Nicaragua shortly after the revolution, of all things. That's certainly tantalizing, but aside from one mention on the radio, I've heard nothing about it since. Have your guess.
No, I haven't.
You heard anything about it, Mike?
No, I'd like him to tell us a little bit more. Maybe he has some information that could help us here. Martin?
I'm afraid I know nothing more than, it was...
That was it. You heard a radio report and that's all, huh?
Yeah,
sounds like something I would put on one of my newscasts during the week, but I don't recall...
Sounds like some PR for the open mind.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Manko.
Maybe we can find out from Ann Segerman, because she's real familiar with the apparitions in South America, and if so, I'll let Bill know what we learn.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Martin, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
You know, any golfer on your golf list...
Hello. I just have a comment to make on a couple calls back.
Mm-hmm.
An individual called and said that the psychic or whatever could be of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't feel as a practicing, I am also a psychic, and I feel as if you pray for somebody and you are helping to enrich their life, how can that be hurting or be devilish? Because the Spirit of God is helping somebody.
I have to agree with you, Dave.
And I feel like, you know, we as an individual, we're all gifted. We all have the sense of... as you might say, sense of intuitiveness or whatever.
We all have psychic abilities.
That's right. And we as an individual, you know, helping somebody is really where it's at. And if a Christian says we're the devil, they're just afraid to know the truth. They want to know the untruth, and they're afraid to face the fact of what their life is about and where they're going. And they just don't want to know what's going on in their world, and they're afraid of, you know, the future. But if you live for God and you live in God's hands, how can this individual say this could be of the devil? When she's just talking, you know, because God is enriching your life, and what they're worrying about the adversary, not the positive.
Well, all things have a two-edged, or two-edged. You can take anything, any tool that you have, whether it is a hammer or whether it is psychic ability, and you can use it to do the work of the devil or good works, either way.
Just like electricity, you can heal somebody or you can kill somebody.
Yep. Nobody's going to argue with it, Dave.
And, you know, people that ought to check into it, and they ought to say, well, when someone calls on the telephone and they say, that must be Mary Jane. Well, is that of the devil? Because when they pick up the phone and Mary Jane's on the line.
That happens to you too, huh?
We all are psychic, you know. People say, they're afraid to say psychic. So, you know, look in the Corinthians and let people, and I feel that we investigate, you know, we're looking, we're researching as a human being for where we're directed.
Well, as a matter of fact, Sir Oliver Lodge had a good observation on that many years ago. Somebody raised the same question and said, fine, well, in that case, if we prove the existence of the devil, then we're doing a very fine piece of research. So by all means, let us investigate the devil, because it also would act as a witness to the opposite side.
Right. And, you know, helping or saying that's of the devil, I come back with the saying, well... You have one, I don't. You worship him, I don't.
It's your problem, but not mine. Is that kind of what you're saying, Dave?
Yeah, it's their problem. And I said, well, you talk about the devil, what your mind can believe and conceive, this is psychological, it will achieve, and you're going to have a devil. Fine, you can have two. Take mine, too. I don't want one. God is love, friend. You know, if you want to worship that, go for it.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much.
God bless.
All right. It does get on people's minds every now and then about psychic phenomena in a religious context. Barbara, you have a very interesting problem here, I notice.
Hi.
How are you, Bill? Haunted radio.
Yeah.
What radio station have you been listening to?
ABC. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
I've talked to you before. I'm the Barbara who pinched Thelma Moss in the night.
Oh, good. Well, hi.
What happened?
I belong to the society.
Oh. You pinched Thelma Moss?
Out of body.
Oh, you were out of body and you pinched Thelma.
That was a little nicer.
Okay. Otherwise, Thelma might have got upset.
No, she didn't. It was her proving I was there.
Did she pinch back?
No, she just got up and got out of bed.
Did she know that you pinched her? Was she aware of the pinch? Because that's a very strong energy field that you're taking with you out of body if you can do that.
Yeah, no, I talked to her the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of psychic energy around me for the past couple of weeks. And last night something happened that really flummoxed me. In the middle of the night, my radio turned on. And I thought maybe I'd accidentally pushed a button or something before I went to bed.
Did you get Ray Breen?
No, I didn't then. It was about 20 minutes to 2, and I got music, very loud.
Was Ray playing music on his show?
I don't know. I was sound asleep. So I got up, and I couldn't shut the radio off, so I pulled it out of the wall, and I still had music. And what it was my transistor radio.
Oh.
Now, could that turn on from weather?
Well, anything's possible. Raymond, why don't you talk about some of the things that, you know, times when things are turned on?
Oh, you can have any kind of weird effect with electronic gadgets, all the way from talking teeth, picking up radio waves. In fact, one of the most peculiar ones I recall was a talking bed spring. You've had things of that type. You've had communications come through various things. So
a talking bed spring?
Yeah.
I've known of some noisy ones that get on your mind from time to time.
Not quite the same.
Cut it out, Bill.
So you can have any kind of odd effect with electronic equipment.
That was really wild. I was so angry I pulled the radio out of the wall, and then it kept playing.
You should have gone out of body and pinched it, Barbara.
I was sound asleep. I didn't even think.
But, you know, there's so many things that are so uncanny sounding and yet are reported. For example, when people die, clock stopping. And these are not just electrical clocks. Some of them are hand-wound kinds of things. And so I guess the reverse could be just, it could not necessarily related to someone dying, but just some unexplained paranormal effect.
As I said, what turned out not to be the plug-in radio, but the transistor.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but it just turned on by itself. That's unusual that it happened, but equipment does have a way of turning on every now and then, particularly when you're dealing with electronics and you're dealing with sensitive things like radios. Odd, but it could happen.
Well, I had felt as though someone has been in the house with me for a couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, it was so disturbing that I called Thelma and told her about it. And then after I did what it told me to do, it went away. But I don't know, maybe it came and turned on the radio last night.
Well, if you can pinch Thelma, maybe that could turn on your radio.
You mean maybe she turned it
she
on?
May have come she may have finally gone out of body and done that. Well, listen, we're going to take a little break right now for news. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's KABC in Los Angeles. Fine tonight, I'm Bill Jenkins, and I'm very delighted to have you aboard. And we have a deep subject for you. Interesting subject tonight. We're talking about psychic phenomena. And who better to talk to you about psychic phenomena than the group from the Southern California Society for Psychical Research. And the president is here, Dr. Liz McAdams, Raymond Bayless, and Mike Nanko, two of our finest investigators into this. And it's not just curiosity here, guys. We're talking about you want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, the whys and wherefores of it. Is it really happening? Is it imagination? And in so many cases, it is really happening, and it's more or less unexplained, or at least we don't have the technology at mind to explain why this is happening. Is that one way to put it, Mike? Are you there? Or do we have to punch
caller.
There we are.
Yeah, we had somewhat of a discussion about the devil and things of that nature, and that's partly because, if we take it a little bit out of the religious context, is that there's still a lot of fear. People anchor the mystique of psychic phenomena still on the negative end of the pole there, and mm-hmm. negative end of the continuum, because they fear it. They just don't know enough. The books and the talk shows and a lot of the things that are going on that only deal with surface issues still present the subject matter in such a way that it's just not, it's still not getting to the core of the phenomena, and people really are still kind of up in the clouds about it. And I think that
There seems to be, well, there is mounting data that suggests that this is very much true. And maybe not necessarily in the context that we're taught about this in the Bible.
You know, Mike, I mentioned to Bill, but we haven't gotten to talk about it yet, and I wish that you could talk about it.